questions, and they kept everyone in line. They'd always seemed omnipotent. "What if we take the overseers hostage when they come?" I asked. Tallow looked like he was going to swallow his tongue. "I don't talk to them much. They come, point at stuff, write notes, and leave. I get the impression they aren't much higher than me, and before you even ask it, no, I don't know who they answer to." I sat down heavily. We'd done so much, and accomplished so little. "What now?" I asked, with my head between my hands. "Are you going to arrest us?" "What? No!" Tallow yelled. "Which one of you killed Durgan?"
"I did," I admitted.
"Was there any other reason you were at the hut?"
"We were looking for a rope to get in here. That's it."
I grabbed the rifle, thinking I could hit him hard enough that he'd fall to the ground and we could get away. I did not mean for him to die. "And what about Hunter and Torek?"
"We killed them as well."
"Those two were self-defense," Tallow threw in. Not that it mattered. Harming a broker in any way was punishable by death. "Yeah, they were asses. Durgan was a good guy, though. Who else knows about those deaths?"
"No one,"
I lied. I didn't want him to know I had told Cedar. I was doing my best not to have her dragged into this thing.
"Good.
Keep it that way." I turned my head and was looking through my splayed fingers. I hadn't been expecting that response. Tallow was still racing to catch on to what was being said. Brody was essentially absolving us of the murders of his men. He had suddenly become an accomplice. "I heard about these places," Brody said, as he dragged a calloused hand across his face. "Book buildings?" I asked, sitting up. "It's called a library." I mumbled the word, trying to become familiar with it. I figured they were myths, paper being as rare as it is and all. "I can't believe I'm doing this. I have a pretty good life. I mean, better than you guys, anyway. I've never liked it, though." "Funny you'd never know it," Tallow's words dripped with sarcasm. "Can you control your boyfriend, please? I'm at a crossroads." I gave Tallow a look that could have frozen water. "You too. Even if the whole township rose up as one, there's no way you could effect change from within here. They'll just come in, crush this rebellion, and probably be home for dinner. I have a different idea. It's going to be incredibly dangerous, and your odds of success are about as dismal as they are now. Maybe even worse."
"Wait, you
want to help us?" Tallow was amazed. "Is he always so quick, Princess?" "That was actually pretty fast for him," I smiled. "Funny, Winter." "You don't look like the bio-building type," Brody said.
"I will not become a breeder. I will not have children just for the sake of feeding the war machine."
"How old are you?" he asked.
"Just turned 16. Why?"
"Happy birthday again, Princess." My eyebrows furrowed as I looked at him, then raised in recognition when I realized his intent. My heart might have skipped a beat or three.
"You want me to go to war next year?"
Brody nodded. "No!" Tallow shouted, coming up beside me and making sure he was between Brody and me. "The war is fought primarily with swords." "We all know that," Tallow said fiercely. At 17, every citizen that was scheduled to go to war was issued a dull practice sword and was required to attend so many hours of training. Here in distance, the futility of the war and scarcity of food had created apathy towards training, and mandatory practice had fallen to the wayside. There were some that took it seriously, but they were so few as to be ineffectual when the conflict actually started. "You don't know this, but I'm from Indian Hill." Tallow and I gasped. The warriors from Indian Hill were legendary, as they'd rarely lost a battle. "We make our walk from the bio buildings at 5, and from the moment we leave, we're given a wooden blade. We train continuously until our 18th birthday, when we put everything we have learned to practical use."
"Killing others, you mean?"
Tallow was simmering.
"Stop, Tallow. They're as much victims as we are. They just chose to do something about it."
"Tallow, I didn't take enjoyment from killing in the war, but if it came down to me or someone else dying, I choose them every single time." That's what you're going to have to do, too.
I'm not killing anyone, he protested.
You already have, Brody pointed out.
Tallow quickly closed his mouth.
Whether it was for the princess here or yourself, you chose your lives over theirs. I'm asking you to do the same, only on a much larger scale.
Then teach me. I'm 17, and I can do what needs to be done. Leave her out of this.
You're not 17 yet, and I don't want to be left out of it, Tallow. I certainly don't want to be left behind wondering if you're going to live or die.
War is no place for women, Winter, especially you.
Ah. This was the first time I understood why he wanted to run away from here so desperately.
War is not a place for anyone, Brody said. I noticed a faraway look in his eyes, like he was remembering something particularly distasteful.
What now? I asked.
Well, first off, you both are going to have to put an end to this uprising and release my men.
Winter, you can't believe him. As soon as they're free, they'll have all the rifles and also know we can't do anything about it.
You're going to have to trust me on this. Brody was looking at me and deliberately not at Tallow.
And it's going to have to be soon. I'll need to let the overseers know that there was an unfortunate accident at the hut. Torek and Hunter were killed in the fire, and Durgan was killed trying to rescue them.
And what of your men, especially Larico? They can't all be of like mind.
This one's smart, Tallow. You're going to have your hands full.
I'll take care of him, and I'm the only one that deals with the overseer's visits. Once they're gone, we'll begin. The training is going to be difficult. I'd say this outland area would be perfect if it weren't so far away. For now, it will have to be in town.
Do either of you live in a single?
I do, Tallow said sourly.
Perfect.
When? I asked.
Tomorrow. I've got one short year to teach you all that I've learned in close to 20 years.
You're 25? Tallow asked incredulously.
That's ancient.
It was a rarity to see a man hit his 20s.
Winter, we can't just go back and tell everyone we were kidding and to give themselves up.
Tallow was right.
Brody, you're going to have to pretend you captured us, I told him.
Pretend? He was looking at the rifles he had in his possession.
Fine, we'll just go with the fact that you captured us and that you won't have us hanged if everyone surrenders.
That should work.
We were walking back toward town when something I'd been dwelling on repeatedly came to the surface.
Why?
I turned slightly to ask Brody, who was trailing us by a few paces in case anyone should see us.
I was wondering when you would ask.
I trained with the people from Indian Hill my entire life.
We were close. Close as children with the same birth mother, I would suppose.
We were kept together with our age group throughout the entire time we lived on the hill.
I had a friend named Marcus. We did everything together. I would have died for him, and it seems he thought the same way about me. When we went to the front, we were given some intel on where the enemy was. It was wrong. They descended on us like rabid dogs.
They?
I asked, hoping it was not people from distance, although I had a hard time imagining Distantians looking like rabid anything.
It was ferals.
They're real?
Tallow stopped walking.
It seemed his mind couldn't process the information and get his legs to work correctly at the same time.
As real as you and me.
Is it true all the women fight alongside the men, whether they're pregnant or not?
I didn't stop to ask if any of them were pregnant, but yes, there were a lot of women. It's pretty common to see them at the war, and without bio-buildings, they have a harder time sustaining their population.
Maybe they have it right, I said.
Don't go feeling all sorry for them. They fought for all they were worth, nearly broke through our ranks.
Marcus was one of the first to die. I was fighting off a feral when two I hadn't seen came up on my side. Marcus cut them off, killed the first one before he ended up with a spear in his stomach for his troubles.
And just like that, a man I'd known my entire life was gone.
And for what?
That's something you both are going to have to figure out. I will not accept that my best friend died for nothing. There is something strange about this war, but I just don't know what it is.
As part of my gift for winning a major battle, I was assigned this post. I expected to find a sector full of hate and resentment for the other sectors. What I found was completely different. I mean, we were always taught that the other sectors were hell-bent on destroying us, so why would they allow brokers amongst their populace from other sectors? What I found was an area that really had no clue as to what was going on or why they were fighting. Our philosophies about how we prepare for the war may be completely dissimilar, but we're very much the same in the why of the fighting. Meaning you don't know either, I asked. Exactly. So Hylians aren't the enemy? And neither are the Feral? That only leaves the Brutons and Klondikes, Tallow said, bewildered. If that is even the case. If I was to hazard a guess, I bet they know about as much as we do, Brody said. Keep walking. I've got a mountain of paperwork I need to finish before tonight, and you've got a rebellion to crush. Then who were we fighting? And for what purpose? I asked. Well, that's the question now, isn't it? Move! Brody's demeanor abruptly changed. He shoved Tallow to the ground with the rifle. What the heck? Someone's coming, Brody said quietly. Princess, help him up and try to make it look like you've been crying or something. It didn't take too much convincing for my already bone-weary, stressed-out body to produce some waterworks. They may have even been for relief that finally we might get some help. Winter! Winter! Is everything all right? We've been looking for you! Cedar stopped well away from us. Get over here, girl! Brody yelled. Cedar hesitated. What are you going to do? Get some more of your stick-laden friends to plant trees around me? These two will be dead and buried by the time you get back. Now get over here! Tears were falling freely from my face. I'm so sorry, Cedar. Winter, I have to tell the others. He'll kill us, I cried out. You're pretty convincing, Princess, he said, just for my ears. Cedar took some tentative steps toward us. Looking back, I'd imagine, in hope some backup would come her way. Did you have to push me so hard? Tallow was brushing grass and dirt off the front of his clothes. Yep. It's over, I told Cedar. It's not just us he'll kill, but everyone in all of distance if we don't surrender. He can't do it alone, Cedar said defiantly. I was proud of her for standing up to him, but not too keen on how she was so willing to sacrifice us. Alone. As soon as I don't check in with the overseers, they'll have an army of brokers in here. No one will survive. It doesn't matter if you stop me. You need to think before you run off and get help. Now, I'm willing to let this whole incident get swept under the rug to some degree. These two main instigators will have some justice to atone for, and the whole community will be on half-rats for a month, but if I can avoid the ton of paperwork that would be involved, the better this will go for all of us. No cutting of rations. Cedar stood her ground. Again, she left us out to dry. At least I thought she had. And Winter and Tallow are allowed to live. I don't think you really have a bargaining chip here, little girl. Brody seemed like he was getting mad. What about your life? Is that not a bargaining chip? Cedar asked. Brody laughed. I guess I can see your point. All right. These two live, but will be under house arrest until I determine they are free to go. And the rations? Fine, fine. Full rations. But you vermin help us rebuild the broker hut. Deal! Cedar bounded off. Holy crap! I didn't think she had it in her, Tallow said. How old is she? Brody asked. 16, same as Winter, Tallow told him. Do you trust her? He asked us. Yes, we answered together. All right, then she's in with you two. We'll start training tomorrow. I'd rather she stay out of this, I protested. You're going to need all the help you can get, and she's got a tough attitude. Now to the next point of business. Sorry about this, kid. For what? Brody punched Tallow so hard he spun to the ground. If I bring you both back with no damage, the other brokers will think I've lost my edge. Where do you want it? Nowhere, I answered honestly. He cocked his head. The lip. The words had barely issued forth when his fist met my face. I staggered back. I'm pretty sure he pulled that punch, but I can't remember ever being in more pain. My bottom lip burst under the assault, blood coating my teeth and tongue. "Damn, Princess, I hit you harder than I hit your boyfriend. I think you broke one of my damn knuckles." He placed his hand up to his mouth and sucked the blood out. I think I would have raved at him and possibly attacked if I were certain my jaw wasn't broken. My lip was swelling so much I could see it when I looked down. I helped a dazed Tallow up, and Brody escorted us through the town, making sure to parade the defeated through the streets. There were hushed murmurs among the crowd that had gathered to watch. Brody's men came out of a building across the way, with a couple heading straight for us. "I've got this under control," Brody said, gripping my face tightly in his hands. My feet danced rapidly from the pain he was inflicting. He was showing them where he'd punched me. This one gave up a hell of a fight, but she realizes her mistake now. "When are we stringing them up? You know we still haven't heard from Torek and Hunter," Larico asked sourly. "I don't know about those two. They've been talking about deserting for months. Maybe they finally did. And Durgan? They must have had something to do with his death. I don't know about that either, but I'll get to the bottom of it. Let's just hang them up and be done with it. When did you go soft?" "Don't push me, Larico. Do you know what kind of paperwork needs to be processed before I can string someone up? If they had something to do with it, I'll find out, and they'll be dealt with. For now, they're under house arrest, and if anything happens to them while they are wards of the town, that person, or persons, will have to answer to me." "And what are the others that rose up? Were you hurt?" "No, but..." "Does anyone look like they're rebelling now?" "No, but..." "Larico, if the overseers catch wind that we lost control of this town, there's a pretty good chance they'll send us back to the war, or worse, become brokers in Feral." When we got to Tallow's, Brody ushered us in quickly. "Listen, some of my men are not going to like the fact that you made them look like fools and destroyed their home." I didn't say anything, but I wanted to tell him that he was the one that lit the place on fire. "In order to save face, I'm going to have to post guards, but I'll make sure it's some of the less vindictive types. Expect to be treated unkindly, at least for a little while. If it gets too bad, let me know and I'll rotate them off the schedule. When it's my turn to guard is when we'll have our lessons. Under no circumstances are you to leave this place. Do you understand me?" Tallow had finally worked the glaze off his features, and now all that was there was unbridled fury. "Relax, sweetheart," Brody goaded. "We're just getting started. You're really going to learn to hate me in the upcoming months. That little love tap I gave you will be a mosquito bite compared to the beatings I'm going to give you both from training. If you hated me before, at least you'll have good reason now." "Oh, my goodness, something to look forward to," I said as I lifted my shirt to wipe my lip. "Sarcasm. I love it. Again, you two do not leave this place. You will be considered escaped convicts, and the guards will shoot on sight, regardless of my orders. That's just the law." Tallow looked like a caged animal, and we'd only been in his place a couple of minutes. "We won't leave, I promise." "Listen to the princess," Brody said, as he shot a look at Tallow. With that, he closed the door behind him. "We need to get out of here," Tallow said. "I heard that, idiot," Brody said from the other side of the door he'd just closed. Tallow sat down in a chair. He looked like he was deflated, as if someone had let all the air out of him. There was some murmuring outside. I guessed it was Brody talking to the guard or guards. I was feeling anxious. Maybe I was catching what Tallow was throwing off. "We could run," Tallow whispered. "And go where? Obviously we can't go back to the library. Distance is huge, Winter. You can't tell me we couldn't hide out for the rest of our lives in the mountains. Maybe. But then what happens to the people we know here? Nothing changes. They go to war, they die, repeat. We could effect a change, Tallow. Do you really believe that crap, Winter? What can he possibly show us that will even remotely prepare us? And what are you doing volunteering? You're giving up a year of your life for what? Oh, tallow. I'm giving it up for you.
Tears threatened to fall. I went down the small hallway, hoping he hadn't noticed.
I'm sorry, he said, coming up behind me and placing one hand on my shoulder.
He rested his forehead on the back of my head. I could feel his breath travel down my neck, the warmth of it spreading through me. I feel like we're in over our heads. We've led a failed rebellion, and now we're planning on launching an even bigger one, yet we don't even know who we're really fighting against. I always thought the brokers were the ones who ran things. Come to find out that they are almost as clueless as we are. It's discouraging. There's a reason for all this. At least I hope there is, I thought. Or else why would we have even found the library to begin with? And what of Brody?
What do you mean?
He could have, and probably should have, shot us the minute he took control of those rifles. He wants change as much as we do. Maybe more.
I don't know, Winter. I'm so confused. I can't even think straight now that you're going to war with me.
We slept a little, but even that got boring. I had no idea how wretched house arrest was going to be. All we could do was watch as daily business in town resumed. At first it was slightly cautious, each side attempting to feel the other out. Would grudges be held? I noticed that the brokers were not carrying rifles. That had to have been Brody's call, especially with the hostility not more than 2 days in the past. The majority of the older kids were assisting in the rebuilding of the broker hut. Apparently, wherever the food cache had been hidden, it had been safe and made it through the fire, as rations had begun anew. The fighting amongst the population seemed to be more involved, as a good number of the people hadn't eaten much in that time frame. Again, Brody held true to his promise. Rations weren't being cut. I was standing by the window, and Tallow was sitting on a thin, matted couch. The door swung open quickly.
"Food," the broker said, before dumping it on the ground.
I looked at the pile of slop on the floor. I'd seen wild animals turn away from stuff that looked better than that.
"Hungry?" Tallow joked.
"I was," I answered back in all seriousness.
Another pile joined the first before Brody finally showed up for his shift.
"Lovely," he said, stepping over what could only be described as green offal. He was carrying a large black canvas bag over his shoulder and set it down on the floor in the living room. He pulled out a portion of pork loin that I could have previously only dreamed about. I could only hope my eyes didn't bug out as much as Tallow's when he saw it. Tallow made a move as if to go for it.
"Hold on, sweetheart. This is for after. That is, if you even want it by then."
"After what?" he asked, never taking his eyes off the food.
This bag was not easy to sneak in here.
He pulled out 4 broadswords. They looked heavier and more deadly than the practice swords handed out to all the 17-year-olds when they started their mandatory training. Brody tossed mine across the room to me. It was a good thing I had a wall behind me or I would have fallen over. As it was, I jammed 2 of my fingers, catching it.
Tallow fared far worse. A red crease swelled on his forehead where the hilt made contact in his failed attempt to catch it.
"Jerk," Tallow muttered, picking up the sword. He ran his fingers across the blade.
"These are as dull as a club.
I wouldn't trust you with anything sharper."
"We've already promised you that we'll play this game your way," Tallow stood, getting a feel for the blade.
"I'm not worried about myself. You'd end up hurting yourself. Probably cut off something you consider pretty important. Nothing anyone else would notice, mind you, but you'd be sad."
"Funny," Tallow said, but he wasn't laughing.
"Sorry I'm late," Cedar said as she ran in.
"Did I miss anything?"
"Oh, just having a sword tossed at you, and what are you doing here?" I asked her as I sucked on my fingers. I looked from her to Brody. I told her everything, including what I read in the history book last night.
She couldn't be more eager to help out, he told me, although in all likelihood she was just too nosy not to be in on what was going on.
"Cedar, are you sure?"
My friend nodded her head.
She did look eager, and maybe even a little excited.
"Yes, princess,
I told her how dangerous this was going to be and that the chances of survival were marginal.
I told him, "Where you go, I go," Cedar responded.
And yes, I did tell her about everything you'd discovered. Move to the couch. We're going to need as much room in here as possible.
When the room was clear, I picked up my sword, wondering how anyone could swing the thing effectively.
"Why are these things so heavy? Shouldn't we have ones like they use for training?"
"Therein lies most of the problem for Distancians," Brody said.
"Huh?"
"They train you, for less than a year, on a sword that is half the weight of the one you'll be issued when you go to war."
"What?"
I was appalled. No wonder barely 1 in 1,000 survived.
"What's going on?" Tallow asked.
"You're lucky you've got looks, kid, because you've got very little going on up top. Princess here figured it out in half a second."
I looked over to Tallow. The gears were spinning in his head, but they were moving independent of each other.
"In what little time the people here train, they're using the wrong weapon. When they get to the war,
they get slaughtered," Brody finished. "Come on, we have to make sure that doesn't happen to you. Ready for your first lesson?"
Tallow was rubbing his head where he'd been struck. "You three are going to hold your sword out in front of you, the blade horizontal to the floor, with your arms outstretched. If and when it dips, I'm going to eat. The more time your sword points down, the less you are going to have."
"How hard could that be?" Tallow boasted.
"For how long?" I asked warily.
"Until I'm full."
"Begin."
Within moments, all of our arms were quavering from the strain. The tip of my blade was wildly dancing from side to side. It went down slightly, and I watched enviously as Brody ripped off a slab of meat. I fought it back up. Cedars was next. I could hear her gasping for air.
"Are you holding your breath?" I asked her.
"Uh-huh."
Her blade came back up. "I've seen 9-year-olds hold it up for 10 minutes, Brody said around a mouthful of food. He was spitting more out as he'd talked than I'd eaten in 2 days. I had my eyes shut and my teeth pressed tight against each other as I warred with gravity. Tallow's point must have dropped as well, because I could hear Brody's lips smacking as he took another hunk.
"Barely finished the last piece. Good thing I brought something to wash it down with."
I thought I smelled tea, but I didn't dare break concentration to look. I felt a small sense of satisfaction as Tallow's point dropped for a second time before mine did. My arms were coated in a sheen of sweat, my hands in danger of completely losing their grip.
"I thought you guys were hungrier than this."
He took another impossibly large bite. My stomach gurgled in protest.
"This is impossible," Tallow said, letting his point touch the floor.
Try as I might, I could not keep the heavy piece of steel from dropping down to match his. Not only was Cedar's blade on the floor, she was bent at the waist like she wanted to join it.
"You pick it up now, maggot, or I'll run you through with it."
The malice with which he delivered those words sent a shock of adrenaline through my body, and he wasn't even talking to me. Cedar's eyes got wide, but she did as Brody told her to do.
"That's better. I don't like to eat my food fast. It gives me indigestion." And then he belched.
Just the smell of his digesting food, as gross as that sounds, had my mouth watering. I don't know how long he kept us like that. I somehow sent my mind away as I locked my arms on a task I did not believe I could accomplish. My body was still. I imagined myself taking my mother to the library, where she would tell me what her childhood was like. We shared the day like that, talking and laughing, much like Cedar and I.
"Winter," she said.
No, that wasn't right. A male voice said it.
"Winter."
He called my name again. I felt a hand on my arm, and the spell was broken. I nearly followed the sword as it crashed to the ground.
"You all right?"
Tallow was looking in my eyes. "He said we could take a break."
"Go on a little vacation, princess?" Brody asked.
He said it carefree enough, but I felt that there was something more underlying to his question.
"Seems you might have the gift. Wish I had more time to work with you."
"Gift," Tallow cried. Shut up and eat something. I'm so stuffed, I'm going to have to undo the buttons on my pants soon. I don't think I even took a breath as I shoveled the food in. Better watch your fingers. She'll strip them of meat before you know what bit you. Brody was leaning back on the couch before he abruptly stood. Hide the swords. I'll be back tomorrow.
How'd you do that, Winter? Cedar asked, after finally getting her fill.
Do what? I hated to talk with a mouthful, but I wasn't going to stop eating to answer questions.
Holding up that sword like that?
What? You did it, too.
Yeah, for a couple of minutes. Then I couldn't hold it up for much more than 10 seconds at a time before it fell. That thing must have hit the ground 50 times.
What are you talking about, Cedar? Brody wasn't here for more than 10 minutes.
It was 2 hours, Winter.
You held that sword up for almost all of it, Tallow answered.
That's ridiculous.
Although this time I did stop eating to think about it. Cedar was looking at me strangely.
Do you believe everything that was in that book? She asked me while we were preparing for bed.
All of it?
I guess not. Now that I'm dwelling on it, seems to me whoever wrote it was from a certain one of those countries and would want their home to shine in a better light. But I do believe there was enough truth in it to merit what we're trying to do.
Can you imagine that?
I didn't know what part she wanted me to imagine. So much of it sounded like fantasy, it was difficult to know where even to start.
Chapter 8
Live by the Sword. The entire rest of the week went the same way, us holding the swords out until we could hold them up no more. But now, instead of eating our food, he resorted to hitting us with the flat of his blade on the back of our legs. I had various degrees of success with the mind-wandering, or time dilation, as Brody called it. The more I thought about doing it, the less successful I was. By the time the end of the week came, Tallow, Cedar, and I could barely sit down because our legs were so bruised and battered. I had to sleep on my stomach for days until the pain subsided. I was thankful in the second week when we were finally able to swing the sword instead of holding it stationary, until I realized we had to keep it moving continually. The metal did feel considerably lighter than it had when we first started. However, we were now using a whole new set of muscles in a completely different manner, and it burned. When we would stop, Brody would smack our arms. I never thought I'd want him to go back to the legs. Our clothes looked like they'd been caught out in the rain by the time Brody had left us that night. I didn't even have enough energy to bathe, so I stripped off most of my clothes and fell onto the bed. I really wish I'd thought to take a look at Tallow's face, as I'm sure he was pretty surprised. I couldn't even imagine the energy necessary to produce a smile, thinking about it. I'd fallen so deeply asleep I didn't even dream. When I awoke the next morning, Tallow was sleeping in a chair next to the bed. I found it odd that the chair was facing away from me. It was then I sat up with a start, covering myself, and I realized I was naked. Tallow stirred as I moved.
"You're awake?" I asked as I scrambled to get some clothes on.
"I didn't get much sleep," he grumbled. "Could you please not do that again?"
Yeah. Sorry. "Where's Cedar?"
"She's on the couch."
"Hey, my little rat," came from down the hallway.
I expected to hear the telltale sign of food hitting the floor, but was surprised when it was the soft clicking of the door shutting instead.
"Must be Turf's turn for watch," Tallow said, stretching.
Turf had been one of the few that would not drop our food on the floor, yet he always felt the need to call us some sort of name.
"2 weeks, Brody. 2 weeks we've been holding swords steady or just swinging them around. When are we going to do something useful, like maybe strike something?" Tallow asked.
He'd been expressing his frustration to me every night, and I knew it was only a matter of time until he said something to Brody. I'd been telling him he'd show us when he thought we were ready. That had done little to nothing to placate him.
"There's a reason for the things I'm teaching you," Brody said evenly. "Yeah, I guess I could always wait for the enemy to impale themselves on my perfectly still sword, or if there's a lot of fog, I'll be able to blow it away with my pinwheel movements."
Brody had been sitting, eating a dried piece of meat.
He'd not even been watching our exercise. "You think you're ready for a swordsmanship lesson, then?" he asked, as he stood and went over to grab his own sword. Tallow nodded. "I didn't hear you tell me that you're ready for a lesson."
"I'm ready," Tallow said, although I noted a hint of wavering in his voice.
"Strike me," Brody said, the tip of his sword touching the ground.
"What?"
"Hit me." Tallow needed no further urging. He lunged, pulling the sword back over his shoulder and bringing it back around when Brody moved. He was so fluid, like a mountain lion. His muscles rippled as he danced back from the swing. His sword came up and struck Tallow's handguard, knocking the blade free. Brody struck the meaty part of Tallow's arm with the flat of his blade, hard enough to draw blood.
"Pick up your sword."
Tallow had his left hand covering over the wound on his right as he bent and picked up his weapon.
"Strike me."
Tallow didn't like the way this was going.
"Strike me," Brody bellowed. Rage contorted his features.
Tallow screamed as he again ran at Brody, this time holding his sword up in front of him. Brody knocked the weapon to the side and with his free hand struck Tallow in the jaw with his fist. Tallow staggered. Brody smacked Tallow's left arm, leaving a matching welt. Then he placed his right foot in Tallow's gut and pushed him over. He sprang over Tallow's body and placed the point of his sword against his throat. He was breathing heavy, a wild look in his eyes.
"Enough," I said softly.
"We're not ready." Brody did not move.
"Brody, we get it. We're not ready."
He finally paused to look over. "That's the problem. You're not ready, and you won't be at this pace. There's too much for you to know in too short a time. I'll be taking double shifts to guard you, triples if I have to. We will train all day if that's what it takes. You, Princess, you are going to fix whatever is wrong. You are going to make what happened to Marcus mean something." He stepped over Tallow. Class dismissed, he barked as he left.
"You all right?" I asked, going over to help him up.
There was a fine line of blood leaving a trail from his Adam's apple to the collar of his shirt, where the material greedily lapped it up.
"Cedar, help me dress his wounds."
The skin on his arms had split in fat swaths where the sword had made contact. Blood seeped from the wounds rather than flowed, the welts nearly a half inch across. At least they were shallow. His busted lip we could do little for.
"Do you think he needs stitches?"
Cedar was looking from the wounds to me. I shook my head and grabbed the salve. "This is going to burn a bit." He issued not a sound when I slathered it on. I knew the pain he was in, though, as a single tear came from his eye. Cedar and I each wrapped an arm in a bandage.
"Probably shouldn't have challenged him," Tallow said, as he put his head back on the headrest of the couch.
I started laughing. "Is he being serious or funny?" Cedar asked. And I laughed harder. Tallow joined in. "Man, that hurt. Thought my damn arms were going to fall off."
"Oh, I think he's being serious."
"Isn't he right, though, Winter? I mean, how are we ever going to learn anything just swinging our arms around?
He's got to have a plan."
I can't say I was particularly keen on defending Brody's actions, but we were trusting him, implicitly, with our lives. I had to believe it was the right thing to do.
"I'm going to bed," Cedar announced abruptly.
Tallow could barely keep his eyes open and went to sleep as well. I suddenly found myself the only one awake. I sat by the window watching as young children darted about playing catch or tag, oblivious to the fact that all of this could be so much better. I saw the older ones fighting beautiful, natural desires that we were meant to have, but never would, because someone somewhere had decreed it. In the 768 pages of the world history book I had read, never did I see anything about biobuildings or entire generations that were destined to fight a never-ending war with an unknown purpose. Just the amount of paper available when the book was written was a testament to the greatness of the age. What had finally happened that toppled so many powerful countries around this gigantic world?
or were they still out there? Was it possible only this country was the one that had spiraled down? Wouldn't another have stepped in, though, to help? So many questions. I felt like my brain was going to liquefy and run out of my ears. I had so few answers to plug up the holes with. I drifted in and out of sleep with my head resting against the windowsill. It was pitch black when I awoke, a sound no louder than the scraping of sawdust on the floor penetrating through my dreams. A shadow, impossibly darker than the surrounding ink, entered through the door. It came in closer, sweeping down the hallway like an enrobed death. I moved as fast as I could to get off the chair I was on with as little sound as I could manage. I don't think a cat could have come in any quieter. I was fairly certain it was Brody. It was roughly the same size. I wanted to see what he was up to. As he looked around, I ducked down. Talib was asleep on the couch, his soft breathing not changing as the darkness crept toward him. I kept the sword low as I maneuvered to get between them, but Brody was faster. By Talib's muffled cries, I could tell Brody had placed a hand over his mouth. I caught a glint of metal as a blade swung through the air. "You're dead," Brody whispered. "Now be quiet." "What?" Talib said, still trying to figure out what was going on as Brody released his hand from his mouth. "Shh, you're dead. I told you that already." Brody wheeled as I placed the blade of my sword against his throat. "You're dead," I hissed.
"How?"
"Forget it. Pretty impressive, princess. Let's draw the curtains and get some lanterns on, because it's going to be a long night." After being so tense and ready for action just moments before, now I only felt exhaustion at the thought of more training. I lit 5 candles and Cedar was dressing before Talo could shake the cobwebs from his head. "What's going on?" he asked. "Your first exercise of the evening and you failed miserably," Brody told him.
"How?
I didn't even do anything." "Oh, I can assure you that you did. You were able to die. The war doesn't stop when the sun goes down. In fact, it becomes more active. When you're your most tired, your most exhausted, your weakest or sickest, it comes. It doesn't care if you haven't eaten or have injuries. It always comes, like a relentless predator. Death will stalk you until the end. That is all it knows."
"Pretty philosophical for this late at night, isn't it?" Cedar asked.
"I've had many nights huddled in cold mud to think about it." Brody had us tie burlap over our blades. It was to be the first time we would actually square off against each other. "During the day, we're going to do the exercises, and at night, I'll be showing you moves. It's not the way I want to teach you, but time is of the essence. We are running out of that precious commodity. Princess, Cedar, you two will pair off. I'll take Sweetheart here." Talib groaned. "Relax. I'll take it easy on you." "I've known you long enough to know you're lying about that," Talib replied. "Bring your blades up and wrap both hands around the hilt. Then I want you to swing with all your might so that your blades clash into each other." As we did so, pain vibrated up my hands, through my arms, and into my skull. It felt like I'd run full tilt into a brick wall. Cedar didn't fare any better, but at least I held on to my blade. Hers flew to the ground, and she was shaking her hands furiously, trying to get that pins and needles feeling out of them. "Finish her," Brody told me. I didn't hesitate as I brought the blade up and lightly touched her neck. "Not gonna learn anything that way," Brody leaned over and smacked Cedar's arm with his blade. She nearly cried out. "When you're fighting, you are continuously clashing blades. You have to prepare for it and be expecting it. Again." By the time Brody left that night, I was fairly convinced I'd never be able to feel my fingers again. I knew Talib was feeling it worse. After a few strikes, Cedar and I had silently agreed to take it easy. Brody felt no such compunction and had mercilessly beat Talo's hands. Talo had scored sort of a moral victory. He had dropped his blade only once after Brody had smacked his arm. After that, he had vowed and kept that vow to not lose it again. "Not half bad, sweetheart," Brody had told him before leaving.
It was the most praise I'd ever heard him give.
"I think my hands are going to fall off," Tallow complained as soon as the door shut. He held them up. They were bright red and as fat as blood sausages.
We continued this way for a couple of months. Time began to blur as we went from one training session to the next, but there was no doubt we were improving steadily. My sword felt as light as a practice stick to me, and I began to think of it as part of my body. Brody never stopped. I don't know when or if he slept, but he always looked as fresh as summer daisies. We, on the other hand, had to nearly pull ourselves off of whatever piece of furniture we had collapsed on the previous evening.
"I am releasing you from arrest," Brody told us after a particularly difficult training session. I'd had the unfortunate luck of the draw to get assigned to him. "This is going to make it somewhat more difficult to get to you in the daytime."
"Why release us, then? I thought we needed as much time as possible," I said.
"Overseers are coming. If I have prisoners, they'll want to know why. There are questions I'd just rather not be asked. Plus, there are some books I want you three to read. I've stacked them on the bench and marked the chapters."
"You've been back to the library?"
"Almost every day, Princess."
"When do you sleep?"
"Only those with a soul need to sleep."
"What did that mean?" Tallow asked when Brody left.
Cedar shrugged her shoulders. "Don't look at me. I don't know either," I told him.
"Is it already mid-season?" Cedar shivered.
6 more months to the war," I said aloud.
"It's not too late, Cedar. You can still back out before Brody turns in the rosters."
"Are you backing out?" she asked me. I shook my head.
"Well, then, there's my answer."
"Is it too late for me to leave?" Tallow asked.
Of the three of us, he was the only one who had to go.
He was joking.
And he wasn't. Brody was hard on him with the sword, and he had reason to be. Tallow was easily the weakest link, as Cedar's abilities had been a huge surprise. My friend, who used to stumble while just walking, was turning into a graceful killing machine. Brody had said finesse-wise she was the best of us all. He thought I had the rawest talent of the three, and something else, something I could see he envied. But Tallow, he said, would be better off throwing rocks from a distance. It was funny now, but in 6 months we would be facing a real opponent who would exploit any weakness they could find to end our lives. I stood outside the apartment building, arms outstretched, trying to catch as much sunlight as I could. It felt strange, being out in the open. At first I'd been claustrophobic, being in Tallow's apartment all day. Now the outdoors was having the same effect. Whatever the opposite is called, I felt exposed and vulnerable outside. I wondered if there was a book in the library I could look up what I was feeling.
"Whoa," Cedar said, as she got her first peek into the book building. "And you kept this a secret from me?"
Brody had been busy. He'd built a ladder that went down into the building. The hole was now concealed by a trap door covered with a thick layer of moss. Anyone who didn't already know the entrance was there would walk right past it. Inside he'd left a bunch of lanterns and some of the flint, along with 3 rifles and 3 swords.
"When you said there were 1 million books, I thought you were exaggerating."
Cedar was running her hands along one of the shelves, a healthy layer of dust wafting into the air in her wake. "Brody left us a note." I was staring at a stack of books neatly placed on a table by the bench.
"He has nice handwriting." Cedar was now staring over my shoulder.
"Oh my gosh, Cedar, do you like Brody?" I asked my friend. Cedar's face flushed.
"He's handsome," she said. "In a Neanderthal type of way," Tallow added.
Neither of us knew what that meant, and when I looked it up later, I made sure not to tell Cedar the meaning. I read the note aloud. "Princess, defend this place at all costs. If anyone discovers it, there is a high probability it will be destroyed, and with it, the proof we need. That's what the rifles are for. You know what the swords are for. I want you to read the book sections I've outlined, and practice what they teach."
"More practice? I think I'd rather just take my chances. How mad are you going to be at me if I die during the first battle?"
Tallow asked morosely.
Don't you talk like that, Tallow. We're going to make it.
You and Cedar will. Your swords almost seem like natural extensions of your bodies. For me, I think it will always be a clumsy foreign object.
Don't start getting defeatist on me. There's nothing wrong with you that more hard work won't fix. Besides, you can't leave me with Cedar. All she does is talk.
I heard that. Cedar's voice came from down one of the aisles.
Hey, I found a romance section. Do you know what that means?
I have no idea, I told her truthfully.
Why?
A lot of the covers have men with long hair and some sort of plaid skirt on.
I find myself strangely drawn to them.
Her voice trailed off. I thumbed through the dictionary until I found the word. I smiled as I read the definition.
Read it, Cedar. I think you'll like it.
Tallow and I are going to practice.
Tallow bested me once while we sparred, and that was only because I was beginning to feel sorry for him. Still, it seemed to add some energy to his work.
Cedar suddenly shrieked. Tallow and I had looked at each other and ran toward her. I got there first. I found her sitting on the floor, her back against the wall, a closed book in her lap, and a look of pure anguish on her face.
"Cedar! Cedar, are you all right?"
I asked with concern, getting down on a knee next to her.
He died, she hiccuped. He told her he would always love her and watch over her. It was so beautiful, she sniffed.
What is she talking about? Tallow asked, looking around for a threat. Who died?
Cedric Barrow,
Cedar blurted out.
He died saving her,
she was wailing.
It's a book, Cedar. Just a story.
I consoled her as I grabbed the book to look at the spine.
Just a story?
She wiped her sleeve across her running nose.
Fiction.
I showed her the small print on the binding.
Fiction? Someone made that up? It didn't really happen?
Someone made it up.
It was incredible, Winter. They loved each other. He traveled forward in time to save her. Then when he became trapped in the present, he died. I didn't know people could feel that way about one another. She's going to have his child, and it wasn't created in a bio building either. They were together. I didn't think that was possible.
There's a whole world we need to relearn here, I told her. I handed her the book back. I had to admit the man in the skirt did look rather appealing.
Can we get back to practicing? Tallow rolled his eyes. And why is he wearing a dress?
Chapter 9. Time marches on, whether we want it to or not. The day the overseers came, the skies threatened to open up. It was cold enough that it could easily be snow that came down. I'd never paid much attention to the overseers before. In fact, most citizens hadn't. Only those that were required to attend the ceremony did so, and that would be all 17-year-olds, either heading to the bio buildings or the battlefields, and of course the brokers. To the rest of the populace, the overseers meant the end, like a visible representation of death on Earth. They were to be avoided at all costs. From all the rumors spread about them, I expected sallow, yellowish-looking men devoid of all substance, monsters of a sort. Instead, they looked exceedingly hale of health. The majority of the 12 of them appeared to have eaten their fill on more occasions than not.
I didn't expect them to be fat,
Tallow whispered to me.
You'd better be quiet if you even want to make it to the war, I told him.
Brody and his men were up on the stage, behind and to the side of the overseers. Those of us going to war were standing, not in formation like I'd seen in the books, but rather in pockets, some held together by friendships, or merely the need to share heat.
"And it is a great and honorable thing upon which you embark," the thinnest of the group droned on.
Brody looked bored, but my peers around me were rapt by every word the man spoke. And why wouldn't they be? They still believed us to be fighting for a higher cause, each probably thinking they could be the one that finally turned the tide and would come home a hero. The speech was most likely the same every year, but only Brody and his men would know.
Though some of you may not return, do not fear. Your sacrifice will not go unnoticed.
Damn it, Cedar said from behind me, just as the first of the snowflakes swirled down. This is going to get my pages wet.
What?
I turned in alarm. Cedar had a small book in her hands.
You can't bring that here. You get caught with that and we're all dead.
I had to know what was going to happen between Derek and Susanna. Relax. No one is paying any attention to us. Look at these sheep all ogling the overseers. I could probably be naked right now and no one would notice. Her eyes immediately went back to the pages. She was right. Every face in the crowd was riveted on the stage, and 11 of the overseers were sitting down, talking amongst themselves. I wondered if it was only tradition that made them still attend these assemblies. My feet were nearly covered in snow by the time we were allowed to leave. Each man had taken a turn to speak. Some wished us nothing more than luck and had sat back down. Others went on and on about the privilege of fighting for the greater good. Cedar was crying again. Some of those closest to us patted her on the shoulder, as if in commiseration of how deeply affected they had been by the overseer's stirring speeches. I knew better. She hadn't heard more than a handful of words. She'd just finished another romance novel.
"I can't believe it," Cedar cried, as we headed to Tallow's apartment and some heat.
"Wait, let me figure it out," Tallow said. "Did Derek die saving Susanna? And, oh, yeah, she's pregnant with his child, so that little piece of him will live on."
How did you know? Did you read this book, too?" Cedar asked.
Tallow was about to tell her that nearly every book she'd read in the romance section had ended in the same tragically beautiful way. I smacked him on the arm. Who were we to take that dream from her?
"What did you learn from yesterday's overseer's gathering?" Brody asked as he came into the apartment. His collar and hat were covered in a thick layer of snow. "It's really coming down."
"I learned they're full of themselves," I replied. "I got the distinct impression we meant nothing to them."
"I learned that Derek, or maybe it was Conrad, possibly could have been Gregor, died for Susanna. Or maybe it was Hannah, or Havana," Tallow said.
"What is he talking about? Did you hit him too hard in the head again?"
"Hi, Brody,"
Cedar said, running out from the bedroom. "What's going on? Why are you blinking like that? Something in your eye?" Brody asked her.
"Maybe we should just get started," I interjected.
"Not today. I want to talk to you guys. It's time to start strategizing. Last night I was able to eavesdrop on the overseers. What they said was not good. That they were laughing about it only makes it worse. So, yeah, princess, you were right. You and your fellow Distancians mean nothing to them."
"Tell us," Cedar said, cutting to the meat of it.
"I don't really even know where to start."
"Start with the truth, Brody," I told him. I could tell by his downtrodden features that whatever the news was, it weighed him down. "They said that all 5 sectors will be in the war this year."
"Is that even possible?" Tallow asked. "That's never happened before."
"Oh, it's possible, considering they decide who goes in and who doesn't."
"I don't think I'm understanding," I said.
"Your overseers? Well, they don't just oversee distance. These 12 men have control over every sector."
"What?" came out of all 3 of us.
I first suspected something when I saw them on stage this morning. Our plans had me really listening to them this year.
These were the same men that came to my town when I was preparing to go to the war. I'm certain of it.
"But that would mean," Tallow said, almost to himself. "How could you not have noticed this before?"
I was angry.
"What difference does it make?" he defended. "This is the hard proof we've been looking for. The war is wrong. Our entire existence is a lie, and they're part of it."
I wanted to yell at him, throw something at him. I didn't believe he hadn't known this before. How dare he withhold information from us? I turned away from him. Cedar had collapsed into a chair, her face held in her hand.